Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you may be in the world. This is Larry Elliott, Blog Talk Radio, 33 million listeners strong. We're so glad that you're able to join us today, and we are broadcasting from our beautiful studios here at WFYT in Nashville, Tennessee, better known to most as the Musical City. We have a very interesting guest, and I am so glad that we have Dr. Sherry Campbell to join us today from the beautiful state of California. And she's going to be talking to us about a lot of issues that I know that so many of you all are very, very interested in. You can give us a call here at the studios at 347-205-9429, or you can email us at elliott21us@yahoo.com. That call-in number again is 347-205-9429, or email us at elliott21us@yahoo.com. We also are tweeting this out to millions of people around the world, so if you want to tweet your questions in to Dr. Campbell, feel free to do that. Also, you Facebook members out there, also feel free to let us know what's on your mind. I'm going to bring Dr. Campbell on the air and let her explain to us what she is all about and what she does. She's such an interesting guest. Dr. Campbell, good morning or good afternoon, wherever you may be. I think you're in California, correct?
Out here, yes, Larry. How are you?
Oh, I am just wonderful. How are you today?
I am doing absolutely great. Excited to be back on your show. Thank you for the invite to have me back.
Well, we're just so happy to have you back because the last time we were not able to cover all of the questions that the people wanted to ask. Dr. Campbell, if you would, once again, tell us a little bit about yourself, your practice, and what you are all about.
Well, I'm a clinical psychologist practicing in Orange County, California, and I've been in business about 7 years, and I'm an out-of-the-box therapist here to find solutions and not be a passive listener to the patients, but to be actively involved in the process and to monitor the change that they take and watch them grow. That's what I'm all about.
You know, that's one of the reasons we wanted to have you back. You are an out-of-the-box thinker. And one of the things that we love about you is that you do not actually put all of your patients into one basket, because I guess people are individualized. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Every person is unique and different, and I don't think you could take one theoretical orientation and apply it to one person. In fact, I think it's homogenizing. I think it is putting everybody to be the same, and I think the only way to live healthy in the world is to go inside and figure out what your uniqueness is, find out who you are, and use the theories, more than one theory, to help each patient in my practice.
Ah, that's quite interesting. Now, I want to ask you a question here. You say that correct decisions, Dr. Campbell, are made within the body. Almost like that we feel our decisions, not think them. What is that all about? Can you explain that to our audience?
Absolutely. One of the fields that I'm interested in is neurocardiology, and it's also tied into neuroscience. And what our neurocardiologists have found is that our heart organ is 65% neuronal, which means it's 65% brain. So ultimately, this is the house of intuition. And if you think about how you feel when you're approaching a decision, you actually feel it inside the body. You're going to feel a yes or a no to a decision. And so most decisions, if they're going to be made correctly, can be made by how you feel, not by what you think. Oftentimes when we press up the emotional state into what we think, we approach fear, and then fear distorts that feeling that we have in our body, and we can second guess, and we can get this, you know, approach avoidance conflict where we approach a decision, we think, yes, this is right, and as we get closer, we go, oh, I don't know if this is right. And so if that's happening to you, you've actually lost contact with what's going on in the body, and whatever's going on in the body, whatever that feeling is, that initial feeling, it is correct, because the organ of the heart is 65% brain. So it's decision-making can be instant. It doesn't have to be really analyzed and overanalyzed and thought through. You can trust what you feel in terms of how you make your decisions.
Wonderful. Doctor, we have someone here on the line that I think would like to talk to you. We're going to bring them on. We don't have their name. They're from area code 347. Larry Elliott, Blog Talk Radio. You're live with Dr. Campbell. Do you have a question or any comments?
Hello?
Hi.
Yes. Hi. How are you? Hi. Who are you?
I'm fine. My name is Tiffany.
Hi, Tiffany.
And I was calling because, I'm sorry, I have an echo.
Okay,
hello?
Go ahead, Tiffany. We hear you. We hear you, Tiffany.
Okay, I was wondering about, I have a friend who has heart issues, a little heart concern, and I was calling to see what, are there any herbs that they can take that will strengthen heart muscles, or what could they do?
Well, I'm actually not a medical doctor. I'm a psychologist. So I think that you would have to either contact a clinically certified nutritionist or contact an MD if it's a physical heart condition.
Okay. But Tiffany, we thank you for that call. Glad that you did call in. We're talking to Dr. Sherry Campbell from Orange County, California. Doctor, we have a tweet in here from St. Louis, Missouri, and the name is Michael. And Michael wants to know, what would be the best advice you can possibly give him if he is a constant worrier? He says he worries about everything. He said he worries about his family, himself, his job, the economy. What would be one of the best things that you could possibly advise Michael pertaining to this?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for your question and welcome to the world of being human. As far as chronic worrying, I think we all do it, so just to normalize it to you just a little bit. But what I always do with worry or anxiety is I make a list and I focus on everything that I can control. And so I will get going on that list daily. I have my patients do the same thing. And then everything that you cannot control, like the economy or things like that, you can kind of do by not doing. But ultimately, getting involved and getting active and working hard in your life is one of the best cures for anxiety. Sitting alone with those fears and not being active will actually allow those anxieties to grow and perpetuate. So, Michael, what I would do is I would make sure that you always daily make a list of everything you can control in that day and work hard to get those things accomplished. Because whatever you can control, it will work out. It will always work out, and you actually won't have to worry quite as much. But it is about training yourself to get focused on what you can control.
Very good advice. We have another call here from Orlando, Florida. It's coming from Facebook, Dr. Campbell, and this is from a young lady by the name of Jennifer Brewer. And Jennifer wants to know, what is cognitive therapy?
Hi. Cognitive therapy is really about thinking. Cognitions are our thoughts, and cognitive therapy is usually linked to behavioral, so it's usually cognitive behavioral. So what treating therapists that use that mode of therapy do is they look at the behaviors and they treat the thoughts that drive those behaviors. To me, I don't think it's efficient. I think that at our core, we're emotional people, and if we're just working the behaviors, then we're only touching upon the symptoms. I really believe that you've got to get in and figure out what emotional state is driving those thoughts, which is driving those behaviors. But cognitive behavioral therapy definitely works the thought and the behavior.
Okay, wonderful. Hey, Dr. Kim, let me ask a question here. What really makes people think negative? Why can't people think positive all the time? It appears to me that people put more emphasis on negative thinking, and that overcomes them, and they're just kind of in a rut. Why do they do that?
Well, Larry, this is going to be kind of an in-depth answer because I'm going to go to neuroscience on this. But we have four brains. We have the reptilian brain, which is about basic survival, fight or flight, and that's where most of us live. We have the emotional cognitive brain. We have the neocortex, which is sort of a nice objective person in our brain, so to speak, and then we have the prefrontals. So what happens is when we get in fear, which I would say that most of our life is lived that way because fear is an incredible motivator, but when we get reptilian-brained, we're worried about basic survival. And the brain really is responsive to the negative because it's attached to such a strong emotional state, which is fear. So it's hard to get out of that state. And I think that being positive is a conscious effort every day. Conscious. You have to make the conscious effort to affirm yourself, to go forward. And again, being active and working hard in your world, the byproduct of that is happiness and no fear.
Okay.
Because
I see.
You're doing something to make a change. If you sit and you let your fear drive the car, you will be on quite the ride. So you've got to be conscious. You've got sometimes to force that positive thinking if you have to.
Okay. So in other words, I guess, Dr. Campbell, people really can control somewhat their emotions. Am I correct on that?
Yes. I mean, emotions are chemicals, but we get to, they're going to run kindness to meanness to kindness again, hope to pain to hope. Really, it's about being aware. It's, you've got to be aware of where you're at. And when you're in fear, get busy. Get busy. Fear is our most evolving response. If you look at evolutionary science, fear is our most evolving emotional response. It's a gift because it makes us move. We're in fear, we get uncomfortable, so we move. If we're in fear and we don't move, we're going to be looking at depression, anxiety constantly. You've got to move when you're in fear. It's your great competitor in this life.
Okay. We're live broadcasting from Nashville, Tennessee, 33 million listeners strong, WFYT Blog Talk Radio. Dr. Sherry Campbell is our guest today. You can call us at 347-205-9429. We also are tweeting this out to thousands of people throughout the world, Facebook, LinkedIn. We ask you to please be sure to email your messages or give us a call here at the studios. Dr. Campbell, if you would, tell us how people can get in contact with you, particularly there in California.
Yes, to all my California people, you can go to creativepsychologicalinsights.com. You can email me at sherrytherapy@aol.com, and you can call me at 714-779-9029.
Wonderful. Dr. Kim, let me ask a question here. You know, can you tell us, or either can you talk about, why do you think emotions are the core of who we are and not our thoughts? Why is that?
Because the emotions are actually chemically based. Our neuroscientists, neurocardiologists have proven that. They, again, once again, know that the heart organ is 65% neuronal. And the first thing that happens to us on any situation coming in that's presented to us is we feel it. And then we think it, and then we do something about it. So getting into the core of who we are is what we feel. Most people don't really care what you think. We can litigate our thoughts all day long, and most people really only care about what they think. They don't really care so much about what you think. But people do care about what other people feel. And so I use the core emotions of mad, sad, glad, afraid, ashamed, hurt, and I train my patients to talk in that language because we can all respond to it. See, thoughts are not universal. We don't all think the same way, but we all feel the same way. The way that I feel sad, Larry, is the same way that you feel sad. The way that I feel angry is the same way that you feel angry. We have different situations over which cause those emotions, but the emotions are universal, and that is why they are the core of who we are. For instance, if I'm in a bad mood, I don't even have to say or tell anyone what I'm thinking because they will see me and feel that I'm in a bad mood. And so it is at the very core of who we are. And most of us are really trapped up in the mind. We're trapped up in litigating. We're trapped up in logic and being right. And no one cares what we think, but people care how we feel, and the feelings are always correct.
That's quite interesting. We have Vanessa Hamilton. Vanessa is from Toronto, Canada, north of the border here. And what Vanessa would like to know, doctor, she would like to know, with her young children, she has some children that's age 12, 16, and 19, and she wanted to know, would it be feasible possibly to get them into therapy so they would be able to make the right decisions early on in life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that decision-making is really what life is all about, and it's mechanical. Ultimately, it's really about what you feel in the body, and I parent my child based on her emotions. I do not parent her behaviors. I parent her feelings. So if she acts out, I can say to my daughter, what are you feeling? What's driving this? I don't ever say, don't do this, don't do that. And I think that if we could get our young people tuned in to making decisions correctly, decisions making those from the body, how they feel, that would just be an excellent source of grounding for them as they go throughout their lives. So, yes, it's a great question, and I would absolutely encourage you to do that. Because therapy just isn't about being dysfunctional or pathological. Therapy is just about being human and learning to be correct in the world. And being correct in the world is mechanical. And so, absolutely, great question.
But, Doctor, let me ask you this. In our society, And this is a question that's coming from one of our, I didn't leave their name, they got anonymous here. It's coming from a LinkedIn individual. And this person tells me that he needs therapy very bad. However, he said he lost his job and everything seems to be going wrong in his life right now. But he says the reason he will not seek therapy is because people would consider him to be crazy. Talk about that.
Oh, well, I wish I had a name to call you, Anonymous. But you know what? Therapy, I think, is really beginning to lose that stigma. I don't have one crazy person in my practice, not one. I have human beings in my practice, and I have people that are struggling with life just in the same way that I struggle in life. Life is challenging, and so there is no stigma. And the other thing about getting into therapy is, you know, we as humans feel like we have to tell everybody everything about ourselves, and we don't. I think there's a certain magic about keeping some stuff about yourself very private. And, you know, this person could absolutely go into therapy, and there isn't any one person he would owe that information to. He's going there for himself, for self-love, for getting himself back together, and I understand that he feels his life is falling apart, and this is a great time to go. The other thing I'd like to say to this person is that if therapy, you know, I think he said that he's losing his job or the economy's affecting
right.
him horribly. Another thing is, you know what, information is just healing. Go to the bookstore. There's a ton of therapists that have written fantastic books about money and, you know, The Science of Getting Rich is a great book, The Secrets of the Millionaire Mind. I mean, getting yourself, if you guys have a problem, all of you listening, if you have a problem in your life, there is information on that problem in a book. Go research it. Toil the soil. Do your work. Whatever input you put into your life, there will be an energy about that, and you will in time get given back. It's mechanical. The problem is that people get in fear, and instead of responding and evolving, they don't do anything.
And I guess that's the worst thing.
It is
not
the worst thing.
Not doing anything.
That's right,
yeah,
Larry.
You know, that makes sense, Dr. Campbell, because if you've got a problem and you don't do anything about it, it appears to me that the problem will become worse. Is that about right?
Larry, you're absolutely on track there. Yes, if we don't do anything, if we don't respond to what our evolutionary basic fear mechanism is telling us, we will get worse. And here's what's hard about today's society is that everything right now is not about working. It's about a quick fix. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not about doing anything. It's like, oh, my gosh, I'm unhappy. I'm anxious. So I'm going to go, you know, to this, you know, I'm going to take medicine, which medicine is fine. I've got plenty of patients on it. But it's not going to make your life less anxiety provoking. You may feel that response a little softer, but you're still in life. And it's on a duality of pain and fear and love. You know, it's living on that duality. So, yeah, you've got to get busy.
Well, doctor, you know, you say this a lot. You say that everyone is unique in the ways that they take in the world. Can you kind of elaborate or explain to us how is it important for a therapist to understand each unique patient? Because they probably come with all kinds of backgrounds, all kinds of problems. So how do you explain that to us?
What I do when I'm sitting with a patient is I take the first four sessions and I try to learn about their model of the world. And when I talk about the model of the world, I'm learning about how they view everything, what their lens is. And every hour in my office is uniquely different. It's a really neat thing about my job is because every human being has a different lens. We all have similarities as well, but we all have a different lens. And so when I'm looking at the surface structure on how they take things in, that then can link me down to the emotional structures, which is at the core that created this model. Because usually in our model of the world, we make three mistakes. The mind does three things. It distorts, it generalizes, and it deletes. Okay? So we get lost at the core. We lose the emotional state. We're distorting what we feel. Then we generalize that this is how it is for everyone. And then we delete any information that does not make our model of the world open. So people come in feeling they have no solutions. And so I look at how they're distorting, what they're distorting. I look at how they're generalizing this distortion to the world. And then I look at and show them what they're deleting. You know what I'm saying? And then what happens is we open up solutions for the life. So we grow the model of the world. And everyone has a different model, and that model is usually created in childhood.
Okay. That's wonderful. We're on the air live this afternoon, this morning, this evening, wherever you may be in the world, with Dr. Sherry Campbell from Orange County, California. She's given us some great information that all of us should know about. Dr. Campbell, I have a person here who has just emailed a question in, and the name is Martha Whitware. I think it's the name, Whitware. And Martha wanted to know whether or not, did you see the Tiger Woods interview when he apologized to the world for his affair? And she wanted to know, what did you, if you did see it, what did you think of it, and what were you able to detect from that?
You know, Martha, I actually did not see the interview. But what I can say about Tiger Woods is this, is I think that any time an athlete or person, anybody, is put up in society as a hero. And I think we can look at all of our celebrities, ultimately Britney Spears, Tiger Woods, any of these people, is we project perfection onto them. We do it as a society. Our media helps us do it. And then I believe that those people live in a bit of an isolation. And out of that isolation, I think that they need a sense of self, and that they actually end up risking everything they have to feel that sense of independence. And I do. I think they're empty. I think they're empty and they need to be filled up. And we think as a society, well, they have everything. You know, they should have everything. They have all this money. They have all this fame. But you know what? It really isn't. It can be a very isolating experience. And no one's perfect. And so when you're projected onto as perfect, sometimes you will rebel really extreme just to feel yourself outside of that projection, outside of that image. So I think it's very sad. I think it's sad because I just think he's human, and he's got a lot of pressure, and he was holding up a perfect image while really not being able to be that, or not being able to even have a chance to be imperfect. And I think he went extreme in his behavior. Mm. But I did not see the interview. So.
Okay. Well, we want to thank you, Martha, for that particular question. And Dr. Campbell, that's some very good advice. Let me ask you another question here too, Dr. Campbell, if I can. When you see a patient, they come to you, how do you monitor that patient? How do you monitor their progress? How do you know whether or not that person's getting better?
I know they're getting better because what happens is they'll start to come into my office and they'll say to me, wow, everyone can tell that I'm changing, or they're meeting goals that they never thought that they could meet. They're changing the way that they think. Their language is changing. They're starting to come from their core. They're starting to be able to relate to people better, because when you come from your emotional state, the mad, sad, glad, afraid, ashamed, hurt, everyone can relate to that. When we're arguing our thoughts, people tune us out. And so what I find is that they become more successful. What I find is that they become more enjoyable to be around. And what I find is that they're coming in telling me that they're getting compliments from the people around them in the fact that they're changing. And I also, my patients work real hard. I'm somebody who makes them be very active. They've got to read, they've got to write, they've got homework every week because they need to take charge of what their life is about. I don't want dependency. I'm not here to engender dependency. I'm here to promote and engender self-sufficiency. And so any time that I get to graduate a patient, I've been successful, and I'm very lucky that I get to do that.
Well, that's wonderful. That's one of the reasons that we love to have you on our show, is because you are a realist and you make this so much fun. I tell you, I just love interviewing you. It's just so much fun.
Thank you, Larry.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Campbell. Someone that has anger issues or maybe an eating disorder, are they already depressed? How do you deal with them? Do you deal with these people differently? Are the techniques almost are the same?
Well, I would say a little bit of both, Larry, because I do have eating disorders in my practice at this point. And again, I look at eating disorders as emotional problems. In fact, they are useful. I've got one patient who knows that whenever she wants to vomit, she feels it as a pressure inside the body. It's not that she wants to get sick. It's not even necessarily that she wants to be thin. It's that she wants to get rid of the pressure she's feeling in the body. And so she will vomit. She also has a lot of pressure at home to be perfect. And so she uses food as a way to control her life. She bases her whole life around the food. As far as anger, anger is also at its core an emotional problem, obviously, but it's related mostly to shame. So if someone feels shamed or humiliated and they are not well attuned to how they feel, they will take that shame and they'll put it up into the mind and distort it, and they'll make it a right or wrong issue. And so what I have to do is then I have to go, okay, well, let's listen. We're in a shame issue. This is really about self-preservation, and you're making it right or wrong. And so I'll work it that way when I'm looking at anger.
Okay. We have Troy. Troy is a student at Vanderbilt University here in Nashville, and Troy wants to know, what is hypotherapy? I've never heard of it. What is that, doctor?
I have no idea. I don't know what hypotherapy is. I don't know, Troy.
I have no idea.
Me either. Not my specialty, I can tell you that.
I tell you, but Troy must be in a different field. Troy, we really don't know, my friend, what that is. Doctor, let me ask you a question. If a person comes to you and they are getting better, is there such thing as a cure, or is this a progression for whatever problems that they may be facing?
That's a great, great question. Therapy is never a cure. It's a process. And ultimately, life is not an event. It's a process. And I would say that a lot of people will come in and think, okay, I've had two sessions with this therapist and I'm not seeing significant change. You're not going to see significant change in two sessions. You are going to have to be involved in the process of the relationship in therapy. It is not a quick fix. This is not an event. And so whether they're in therapy or I graduate them, what they learn to know is they learn to be in the moment, in the now, in that space of healing of what they can do today, what they can control today, and you got to let go of the rest. But it's hard to do that with an anxious mind. And so through the process of therapy, I can train them on how to stay focused in the now and make their life as a process. You know, it's a process of decision-making.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Mary. Because let me ask you something, Doctor. We've got about 3 minutes left on the show here. But I want to ask you this. A person really cannot really change what happened in the past, neither can they determine what's going to happen in the future. So would you advise them to live now in the moment? Live what you can control now and focus on the moment.
This is what I would advise. Let's look at this as a car, okay? You're driving the car in the now. To look in your rearview mirror, you've got to know what you don't want to run into so you see that you've learned your lessons. Okay, you've got self-awareness from the past. But constantly you also want to be looking out the front window or you're going to crash. But what you can control right now is driving the car. So when you wake up in a day, especially for the gentleman that called in very anxious about everything and worrying all the time, get busy. Make a list. Focus on driving your car today. And every day, that's how it's got to be. He may even want to chunk that down into, I'm going to focus on what I can control from 7 in the morning until 10 o'clock. Then at 10 o'clock, see where you're at, look in the rearview mirror, look forward, and now make another 3 hours that you can control. Sometimes when we break things down into bigger pieces, we distort our anxiety. We look at the big mountain and we go, my God, I'm never going to be able to get through this. So we've got to chunk things down in time. We need to use time and chunk it down and look at what you can focus on right now.
I understand. That's great advice. Dr. Campbell, we've got less than a minute here on the air. Can you explain a process for people to follow in terms of attracting them to things that they want? How do you get what you want?
Well, I think when we want to look at getting what we want, we start with asking a question. And then on the second step, we would begin doing our research. Okay, we research that question. And on the third step, we hit a plateau. We've done all the research that we can. What happens here on the fourth step is brilliant. We give up. We give up. The brain chemistry clears. So you have to see this all the time with women trying to get pregnant. The minute they give up, they get pregnant. There's something very magical about the brain is that when you do all your work, and this is the step everyone needs to understand, you have to do all the work. Then give up, and then your answer is going to come, and you're going to get your answer in a way that you never expected it, okay? Because when you're in those first three steps, you have a fixed way or a fixed idea of what you want your answer to be or what you want to attract to you. Then when you give up, you'll find you're getting exactly what you want, but it comes in a form that you never could have imagined. But you've got to clear the brain chemistry to do that. So that's it's 100% mechanical and 100% foolproof.
Well, Dr. Campbell, I'll tell you what, we always seem to run out of time when things are really, really getting good. You know, the thing that I want to ask you before we leave the air It's about your contact information. Briefly, give us your contact information once again.
You bet. My phone number is 714-779-9029, and my website is creativepsychologicalinsights.com, and you can email me at sherrytherapy@aol.com.
Dr. Campbell, you are just a jewel. You are so you're so energetic. You have so much knowledge, and I appreciate you sharing all of this with our listeners all around the world. We have several other people, particularly out of Canada, that we're not going to have time to get to today. But I would highly advise you to maybe email or call Dr. Campbell, particularly there if you are in California, because she has some great insight. Dr. Campbell, thank you once again, and we're going to do this again if you're up to it.
I'm up to it, Larry. I love coming, and have a great day, evening, wherever you are, everybody, and I look forward to speaking with you all again very soon.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sherry. We appreciate your time and your knowledge. Larry
okay.
Elliott, Block Talk Radio, 33 million listeners strong. We have just been broadcasting live with Dr. Sherry Campbell, live from Orange County, California. She's such a remarkable person. We would like also for you to continue to listen to our broadcast, because we broadcast daily different programs, different shows. But this has been a great show. This is Larry Elliott, WFYT, Blog Talk Radio, Nashville, Tennessee. Have a great day and a wonderful life. Sure. Okay. He's a playmaker. Leave him as a playmaker. Say hi, my little fellow. Huh? Do what? That's my little fellow. That's my little fellow. What is?
May.
I bet that's gonna be cute.
Where your pen?
Ink pen. That's gonna be cute. I can't wait. Love my little fella, my little baby girl. Y'all gonna have another one?
I'm
gonna
have another what?
Babe.
Oh.
You can tell.
Yeah, my
tooth
got.
I knew that.
I don't know.
What about that octo mom? I bet she's poor. She crazy, ain't she?
She got money and people
watching
and doing this on
there. I bet you she don't. What the fuck? Hello. Hey, baby, what's going on with you? No, I couldn't find it. I'm looking through these things now. I passed all this other stuff over there. I thought I needed it. So I got to contact this guy who's supposed to be helping me with this. But I'm going through some stuff. I don't know. I'll look through this and see if I can find it. Well, I have a call just in case. Hang on for just one. Let me call you right back here. Bye. Larry Elliott. Calvin, I'm wonderful. How are you? Yeah. Hello? Hey, Calvin. I can hear you fine, sir.
What you doing, Brother Calvin?
Uh-huh. Okay.
You doing what? You talking to the iPod? How you doing that, Brother Calvin?
Go ahead with your bad self. What? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Okay, at work. I mean, it sounds good, man. I'm telling you, it sounds just like you are on a regular phone. You're talking through Skype, right? Man, I wish you could realize how clear you are. Hell, that sounds clearer than the phone. I'm serious. Man. Okay. Man, I'm telling you. So, see, that's good. See, you can use Skype. So, of course, they won't let us use it. You can use it through your iPod. That's good. Mm-hmm. 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 Good, man. That's great. Can you use Google the same way? Well, let me ask you this. Google Voice. Can you use Google Voice like you do Skype? Okay. Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Boy, I don't know how you do. I don't know how you figure all this crap out, Kevin. It's, the way it sounds, it's worth it, though. Right. Gotcha. It sounds good, man. I'm telling you, it's I love it. You sound real good on it. No, I'm at the house today. I didn't go to Green Hill. Okay. Oh, I hear you. Okay. I may come out there. How long are you going to be out there? I might try to come by there. Ron's good at that crap. Oh, Ron, no. Ron did it. He know he did it. Tell him to quit that crap. Now, there you go. Yeah, they owe you a whole one. They owe you a new one. Now, Kevin, you're going to have to let them know that you're the mayor of Green Hills, and you just don't tolerate that kind of crap. You're going to have to let them know that. Brother Calvin, we got disconnected. I see you calling right now, so hold on, let me grab you. Calvin. Hello? Hey, Calvin. Brother Calvin. Hey there, Brother Calvin. We got disconnected, man. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Hey, Kay. Tiffany's here. Her and Jennifer. Yeah, they've been here all afternoon. Mm-hmm. She's watching. About the two little babies. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's a doll. Have you ever seen her? Oh, she's cute. I told them they ought to open up a daycare the way they love babies. Both of them. She's upstairs now. Did I tell her? Shirley called and Juanita called, give the arrangements of that woman's funeral. It's Wednesday, 11 o'clock visitation, 12 o'clock funeral. I don't think. Shirley said Shirley said call her, she'll talk to you tonight. And then I told her left a voicemail for my phone. Huh? Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I will. Love you, man. Hey, Tim, your mom said what time I stole Monday? Thursday.
Nine.
Okay.
I'm leaving my message. Hey, baby, this is me. I don't even know what I called you for now. Oh, yeah. Did you call the bank about that check? And Tiffany said that store opened at 9 o'clock. I love you. See you later. Bye. What would people do without cell phones? You get tired of them, huh? Misha don't. I told Misha, I said, if you... Did that?
Yep, I'm up here trying to find a... some ice writer. I said, if they put their hands on you, you're your bed. You ain't gonna be in trouble.
Misha.
She's crying because my seatbelt passed her.
She didn't start nothing, did she?
No, that's some ice writers. The ice writers, come on now, she's in the sixth grade. I don't care if she's fine or not. Keep your hands off of her. Somebody was pushing me around school, telling me they're not making nobody push them around no more. I'm going to beat you down.
I told Nisha last night, something. If you don't answer that phone, your poppy going to have something to say with you, do something with you. I said, you know you're on punishment. She said, I'm on punishment. I said, you know you're on punishment. She said, man, I am. She felt like she didn't know what I was talking about.
She ain't no punishment, no. It's not.
That's my baby, my grandbabies.
Yeah, right
now. I love my grandbabies. That little one, boy, that little one, sure can do some crying. That little middle, good. That little middle, she can't come over here no more until she's 25,000 years old and there.
Big
white?
I'm cutting out these drawers up there.
Oh. I'm gonna get out of here. I got to go.